Hi, this is Jim.
And this is Max.
Check out our podcast, The Step Over, Liberty Ballers Podcast Network, for all of your Sixers needs.
Player analysis, game breakdowns, who would look coolest in a headband, and more.
Subscribe to Liberty Ballers Podcast feed on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and check out The Step Over, a podcast about Sixers basketball.
Mostly.
Batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 243. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. This podcast, of course, powered by SB Nation. And we've got, we're still in the middle of the hot stove, and the week after Christmas is usually the deadest time on the baseball calendar. Folks, there is literally nothing going on right now. There is no chatter. The rumors that we're getting coming in, it's just a matter of the MLB Network trying to fill time. So really what we're going to do today is we're going to do an all mailbag edition of the podcast. And joining me to do that is my good buddy from The Good Fight, Paul Boyer. Paul also runs the social media, the Twitter account for The Good Fight. So anytime you are adding The Good Fight, you're adding Paul, but you can also follow Paul on Twitter at Paul_Boyer. And Paul, welcome back to Hittin' Season. It's been a while, pal. How you feeling?
John, what's up, buddy? Merry Christmas.
Christmas to you too.
I am feeling wonderful. I am very tired of rumors. I am very, very sick of rumors, but at the same time, they fuel me and I need more of them. So caught in a weird place.
Christmas was nice, but the lack of rumors rendered it incomplete, did it not?
Honestly, I could have done with one more Rosenthal or Morosi tweet as I sat with my family opening presents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I looked over at my wife at one point and I just said, you know, this is a really nice Christmas. The boys are really having a great time. I think all the gifts were a hit and we had some wonderful time with family, but you know, it's just missing that little something. And then it dawned on me what it was. It was another John Heyman tweet telling me how nobody wants to play in Philadelphia. And that's really, that was the missing link to a success, to a 100% successful Christmas. So we'll get to that here in just a few minutes as well. But first, also, I wanted to say congratulations to you, newlywed. Congratulations on that. That happened since the last time we spoke as well. So way to go, my friend.
Thank you very much. Yes, that happened back on November 3rd. That was... That's very nice of you to say. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. So we are going to get into some mailbag questions from our Twitter friends and a couple from our Patreon podcast pals as well. But before we get into the mailbag, I have to give a shout out to our good friend Justin Clue and Dr. Trevor Strunk. You know them, folks, from The Dirty Inning, one of the Good Fight podcasts, along with Continued Success and Hittin' Season. And you guys know by now the great work that Justin does and you know, Trev as well. But Justin, with the writing on The Good Fight, in addition to all the podcasting work that he's doing for us, has just been doing yeoman's work, basically running The Good Fight since Liz Rocher left for Yahoo Sports. And so he's been doing a lot of great writing. He's been doing the Continued Success podcast. He's been doing this podcast on Sunday nights. And he also does The Dirty Inning, which I know a lot of you guys listening listen to The Dirty Inning as well. But for those of you who don't, you really need to start giving it a try. And just as further proof, so that I'm not being a homer about this whole thing, that I'm not just promoting it because it's a Good Fight podcast feed, earlier this week, or maybe it was at the end of last week, I don't remember exactly when it was, but the Philly Voice put out its best Philly podcast list for 2017, and The Dirty Inning was among the best Philly podcasts out there this last year. And it's, I mean, I guess this year technically, because there's still a few days left in 2018. But I mean, it's just, it's validation for all of the hard work that Justin puts in to that podcast, where they look at an individual inning in Philly's history, basically recounting the worst innings in Philly's history and some of the worst players, most interesting players. And they have a new episode out. It's a Christmas themed episode where you're definitely going to want to check that out. It's really funny, so well researched, and Trev and Justin have a great chemistry together on the air. So I had to get that out there. Go to thephillyvoice.com. phillyexpress.com and check out their Best Philly podcast list read the little blurb they have about the dirty inning. But if you haven't been listening to that podcast, please make sure you do that. Rectify that situation. Make it a part of your daily or weekly podcasting consumption, because it's only once every couple weeks they do a show, because Justin and Trev really put a lot of time into researching the show and making it fun. So
boys.
Yeah, I mean, just yeah, exactly. That's well said, Paul. Very good. That's right. So great job, Justin and Trev, and make sure you check out The Dirty Inning and subscribe to the Good Fight podcast feed. You know, it would be really nice if you left a review for The Dirty Inning as well at Apple Podcasts. Let Trev and Justin know that you're listening to it and what you think of the show. All right, Paul, you and I have some mailbag stuff to get into, and I think there were a lot of... Yeah, I know. Roll up your sleeves, get a drink of water or something stronger, whatever you decide. Let's dig in here, because there's a lot of unanswered questions out there, which is understandable, because right now we are in an information vacuum. Yeah. We are dealing in the land and the realm of rhetoric and rumor. And before we get into the mailbag, just give me your thoughts on the offseason so far, Paul, because we haven't talked to you yet about the Andrew McCutchen signing, and we haven't talked about the Jean Segura trade. Can you talk a little bit about what you think the Phillies are doing so far, especially maybe in relation to how the rest of the National League East is shaking out so far?
Yeah, you know, I like it. I think they were necessary moves to try and keep pace with what the rest of the division is doing. Obviously, the Nationals and the Mets have been super active. The Braves are already the division champions, and they're not sleeping. This is obviously an incomplete offseason, but as far as the two big fish are still out there, you know, the Phillies are obviously in the mix to get those guys and hopefully elevate themselves to, you know, thinking about a playoff spot. You know, I think that's where we have to set expectations right now of where we want this team to be at the end of the offseason as a playoff contender. Right now, they're probably right around where they were overall last season, around 500. And that's probably not going to get it done in terms of playoffs. That being said, you know, you can't look at this as some sort of failure just because they haven't signed Harper or Machado yet, that they missed out on Patrick Corbin, who would have been nice, but wasn't necessary, I guess I would say. It's fine. The offseason is good so far. It's on the right track. It's just incomplete.
Yeah, you can't penalize the Phillies yet because they haven't signed Harper Machado, because no one has signed Harper or Machado so far. So, you know, I think that's the feeling out there, is that it's the Phillies are falling behind because they haven't made that big signing. But we all know that the target this offseason was one of Macharper, as I'm referring to them both. It just saves time. And, yeah. And, you know, so that's the thing, is we see the Mets making moves. We see the Braves making moves. We especially see the Nats making moves. For anybody who thought the Nationals window was closing if they lost Bryce Harper, wrong. Juan Soto said, no, let me shove my hugely talented boot in that window. We're going to prop that open for another 6 or 7 years, along with Victor Robles, along with Max Scherzer and Patrick Corbin and Steven Strasburg, and Rendon is still there. I think he's probably going to sign an extension at some point. So, I mean, that team's going to be good. It's going to be good for a while. And so I think there's a feeling that the Phillies are falling behind, and we're seeing a lot. Here's the other thing I'll mention, and then, you know, let's get to the mailbag, but I wanted to get your thoughts on this too. Seeing the Phillies interested in everybody, but signing really nobody. And that maybe that makes it seem like, just because the Phillies have interest in someone or are having discussions about someone doesn't mean that they're serious about all of them. But we've heard the Phillies connected to just about everybody. I think on the pitching side, it's been a little bit disappointing. I don't know exactly what this team's strategy is as far as the rotation. They obviously thought that their rotation needed help to the point where they went to all the trouble of inviting Patrick Corbin for a visit, putting his name and face up on the Jumbotron or the Philly scoreboard, whatever they call it, and offering him reportedly 5 years, but not willing to go 6 years. I mean, I get it if you don't want to sign a starting pitcher to any more than a 3 or 4 year deal and you don't want to go six, but if you're prepared to go five, why not take the extra year if it's a guy you liked enough to jump through all those hoops? Same thing with Andrew Miller. It doesn't seem as though the Phillies wanted to match or better the offer that Andrew Miller got with the Cardinals. Same thing with Jay Happ. The Phillies were reportedly rumored to be very interested in Jay Happ, didn't want to give the same kind of commitment to a third year that the Yankees gave. So it seems as though we're hearing the Phillies mentioned a lot with a lot of different players. And so far, really, there has been one free agent addition and one trade. That being said, there are still options out there. But do you understand some of the frustration that's out there right now?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I get it. People are anxious. They are tired of the five-year losing streak. They are tired of going back and forth daily with every little bit of rumor being yanked back and forth without really being told anything new. Like, I get it.
Yeah.
We get to this point in late December.
Well, let me interrupt you. The only thing we're told is Andy McPhail coming out and throwing cold water on things.
Well, sure. Right. And that's where things start to get – that's where things start to get really tricky for us on the outside, right? Because we only know what we're told. We only know what we hear from people relaying these things to – those who have the mouthpieces, those who can put out these articles, in some cases tweets, let us know like what people say. And rarely is that information discrete. And is that information actually tangibly outlined with this was the offer in terms of years and money explicitly?
Right.
We rarely ever get that far. What we have is rumor. What we have is interest. What we have is link. Right. You hear these things and you think, oh, okay, there's some sort of genuine level of interest there. Right. So we figure the Phillies have to be involved on all these guys. They have some interest on everybody. They want everybody to come on the team. When in fact, there are parts missing. We don't know 100% of the story. We don't know. And this is a little bit cynical, but it's true. We don't know if the Phillies are being used as leverage by an agent. Mm-hmm. We don't know if the Phillies are leaking interest themselves to try and get another team to act hastily or add a year or add some money to their offer. We don't know where some of this information is coming from 95% of the time. We just don't know. And so when you look at things like Andrew Miller taking the offer that he took from the Cardinals, and maybe the Phillies were in the ballpark. We don't know what the Phillies offer was, if they actually did make an offer. All we knew is there was strong interest and that eventually dissolved. We also don't know if the players have strong preferences toward a place or an environment or a pitch or something else worked into the salary that just puts it over the edge. There are a lot of little things missing that can make the difference because these guys are human. They have human interests on top of the money. Yes, it's possible to overwhelm with raw money like we think this team can do, but there are other things that just work into it, and you're not just going to tack on $10 million a year for every player just because you have the room right now. You can do that for special cases, but you're not going to pay Andrew Miller $20 million a year just to bring him on. You're not going to do that.
Right.
So yes, I get the anxiety. I really do. I think it's worthwhile to understand that we don't know everything about these negotiations and what these guys want and what exactly was offered. So when we see something like Andrew Miller going somewhere else, or we hear rumors that, Mitch Harper... That's fun to use.
I hope it catches on. It's only going to be for this offseason, but we'll have fun.
That Mitch Harper don't like Philadelphia. Like they don't have a predilection toward Philadelphia.
Yeah, Joel Sherman of the New York Post is the latest to offer that little nugget today. Yeah,
and I mean, what does that mean? What does that tell us?
Right.
It's nothing. It's nothing is what it is. But it all feeds into this less than daily news cycle we have now, where every little bit of information plays on our psyches and plays on our emotions, and we get yanked back and forth and back and forth, when in reality we are in no different a position right now today than when this offseason started at the end of October and early November. It hasn't changed except for McCutchen and Segura, with a couple players going out. That has changed, but with regard to the big fish, nothing has changed. Nothing.
Yeah, I agree with you. And the one thing I don't want to hear anymore, though, is the Phillies front office trying to slow play this offseason. You just have to stop trying to sell us that, because it's not happening. The fans want Mitch Harper, one of them. And it's not going to be, trying to get us to look forward to the next offseason or the offseason after that. And it's just not going to sell. It's not going to wash.
No.
And it doesn't sound... like the front office has their feet cemented in reality when they start saying stuff like that. Andy McPhail just needs to let Matt Klentak or whoever do the talking from this point on, and just let him stay and be with his deliberative process in the back and make the decisions, and that's fine. But I think other people need to do the talking publicly right now, because nobody wants to hear that. Nobody wants to hear about next year's free agent class, which could look radically different than it does right now. Oh, yeah. Based on extensions and all that stuff. People still looking at Mike Trout in 2 years, assuming he's going to be a free agent, and assuming he's going to want to run home to Philadelphia when he's a free agent. You can't make decisions now based on that. I saw some people saying they don't want to go 3 years on Happ or 3 years on Miller because they're saving room for Trout. Matt Klentak may not even be here at that point. He's not saving room for a free agent class he may not be here for. He's got to get this free agent class right. And people are overthinking the Macharpa stuff, trying to look for ways to avoid paying these guys or giving them the years that they want. That's the thing that's kind of throwing me now, is we were looking toward this offseason, looking at Macharpa and saying, look at these young guys on Hall of Fame tracks in their mid-20s. Free agents like this never come around. Well, that hasn't changed.
No.
But people, I think, are – there's the doom and gloomers out there who are – guarding themselves against not getting one of them, and so I think their way of guarding themselves against missing out is to say, well, you know, they're not worth the investment anyway, which is crazy talk.
Yeah, you start Stockholm syndroming yourself and thinking that the worst case scenario is actually your best friend, and you know, watching these guys go is like, well, you know, yeah, actually that's okay. And you say it with a grimace on your face. It's the tough thing about this, right, is that these guys, one or both of them signing elsewhere, may not necessarily be the front office's fault. In the end, they may do everything right. They may be perfectly aggressive. They may make a competitive offer. They may even beat the eventual signing team's offer. We probably won't know, but they may do that. And then they might lose the player anyway. It still becomes a failure. And that's tough. That's a bad beat. That's a bad situation to be in. But it's hard to look at it any other way, right? You look at this team and the way they've ramped up toward this offseason – it has mostly worked out for them. They unfortunately, you know, tragically don't have Jose Fernandez available. You also, the free agent class just has not shaped up to be the way it was looking to be 2 years ago. Kershaw is not a free agent, but
Matt Harvey fell off a cliff.
Yeah, exactly.
McCutcheon's not the player that he was, even though the Phillies. I mean, yeah, you're right.
100% correct. But you still have two huge fish, and you still have the resources. You still have the need, and you still have the availability. And apparently, the front running capability of being a 1-in-4 shot, give or take, of landing these guys. That's a great position. That procedurally is a success. But if neither of those guys actually arrives and inks a deal to play for the Phillies, it's a failure. It's a really, really tough situation to be in.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, let's jump into the mailbag here, because some of these questions have to do with some of the stuff we're talking about right now. And we'll start off with John Middleton's bank account. That's a Twitter handle, folks, @theprocess10, asking, as of now, what is your predictions for where Harper and Machado sign and how much they get? And let me just run the odds by you here from Odds Shark as of December 22nd. These are the odds to sign Bryce Harper. The Dodgers now at the +200 are the favorites, with the Phillies in second, Yankees third at +400. The Cubs, White Sox, Cardinals, and Nationals fill it out there. But right now, Odds Shark has the Dodgers as the odds-on favorite to sign Bryce Harper. I'll go first, and I will say I know the Phillies are making the hard push for Machado here. I don't know that that's the one they end up with. I think that Machado's desire to play in New York is greater than Harper's desire to play in New York. Machado strikes me as the type of guy who will take less money to go play for the Yankees and fewer years at the same money. And that, because if you're talking about opt-outs anyway, you know, each guy might opt out after 3 years anyway and hit the market again when they're 30. So it might, the 8 years versus 10 years might not be as much of a selling point to one or two of these guys. I mean, they might just want to, you know, and maybe one of them wants to set the record for the biggest contract ever. And if they do, then that's probably going to happen with the Phillies. But my guess right now is Machado goes to the Yankees for an 8-year deal. at around, let's see, what's eight times seven, for about $250 million. And, yeah, that's a lot of money. And I'm going to say Bryce Harper. Oh, I want to say he comes to the Phillies. I really do. The Dodgers are lurking there. I just don't think the Dodgers have the payroll flexibility, and it seems like they want to do other things.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say Harper to the Phillies, and I'm going to say 10 years, 350.
Yeah, I still really like the Phillies' chances here. I know that the recent Puig trade out to Cincinnati made a lot of people really nervous because, you know, there's some accounting trickery in there whereby even by taking Homer Bailey back from Cincinnati, they end up saving some money against tax cap and all these other things. And that's wonderful. Whatever. I think at the end of the day, if the Dodgers are really serious about these guys, they don't really care about the luxury tax, and they'll pay what looks to amount to be a rather small monetary penalty if we're looking at what the Red Sox it was.
Well, that's because they got under it last year, Paul. Yeah, so that really helped.
So I think the Dodgers have, like you were just saying, other needs that they want to press. Their rotation has questions, right? They have a lot of guys who are good but have health issues. Even Kershaw, you know, Kershaw's got some back problems.
Oh, yeah.
Hyunjin Ryu cannot stay on the field for very long, it seems. Rich Hill is almost 40 years old, and though he's been effective lately, he's had blister issues, and he could fall off at any time. That could happen. Alex Wood went to Cincinnati, so that's a bit of the rotation depth that they lost there. They're getting Homer Bailey back, but I believe if they haven't already, they're just outright releasing him. It's really just like a balance sheet move. So I think really they're in more of a position to either work for Corey Kluber from Cleveland, or because their catching situation is so weird right now, I think Austin Barnes is the only catcher left on their active roster now that Grandal is a free agent. That they could be serious JT Realmuto players. I think those two moves in terms of like big fish hunting make more sense than Harper, even though they now have a little bit more wiggle room. I think the Phillies are probably neck and neck with the White Sox. I think the White Sox are a little low on this list. They're ranked fifth here. I think they're a little low.
They should be ahead of the Cubs, I think.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely ahead of the Cubs. I think they should be ahead of the Yankees just because the Yankees have too many outfielders right now.
Yeah.
And even with first base theoretically open and with the DH to rotate, you're still talking about Stanton, Judge, Hicks, Ellsbury, Gardner. That's a lot of guys who, I mean, if Ellsbury is even healthy at this point, that's a lot of guys who need to rotate in and get time. And I don't know who they could move to make that happen. I guess theoretically they could. I don't think it's a pressing need for them to go all out and get him. So I think I really think it's the Phillies and White Sox right now, as we sit here today.
I think you're right. I think you're right. I think the White Sox are kind of laying in the weeds. And to your point about the Dodgers, Bryce Harper's bat isn't a fit in that lineup either. They're so left-handed heavy already. You got Cody Bellinger, Jock Peterson, Max Muncy, Corey Seager when he comes back. I mean, they're all lefties. And I think I'm forgetting one, too, in the mix there. So, I mean, they need a right-handed bat to balance that lineup out. That's why Machado, even when I don't want to. That's why Machado was so good for them last year. He was a good right-handed bat in the middle of a very, very, very left-handed heavy lineup. So that's why I Harper to the Dodgers still just, when you look at the makeup of that team, it makes all the sense in the world as a cultural fit. You know, it seems like a move the Dodgers would make to bring in a big marquee guy like that. I think Harper would love to play for the Dodgers. Who wouldn't love to play for the Dodgers? But I don't think that they want to go eight. And I think Harper does want to set the contract record. I think he does want to beat Giancarlo Stanton's record.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I really do. And I think he will ultimately go where the money is the largest. And I ultimately think that will end up being with the Phillies. Because also, here's the other thing with Harper. I think Gabe Kapler likes him more than Machado. You listen to Kapler talk about Bryce Harper. When he was at the winter meetings, he went on and on about Bryce Harper. He had a very nice thing to say about Machado when he was asked about him, but it was a very professional, stately kind of thing to say. With Harper, it sounded like a father doting on his child. He called him the best player in the league last year during the season. I think Kapler wants Harper more than anybody else, and I don't know if the front office shares that sentiment, but I know I don't know the manager feels that way, but I'm like 95% sure the manager wants Harper, and I don't know if that's going to have any effect at all, but that's my read on it anyway.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you're not seeking input from your manager when looking to make a move like this and at least listening, then you're not doing your full job. So I'm sure at least if he does have that view, that he's able to share that feedback with everybody.
Yep. Let's move on to the next one here. Tim Westcott, at Tim Westcott, asks, if the Phillies miss out on Macharper, what is, and I love to use Macharper in the tweet. This is fantastic. What is,
what a guy.
Good job, Tim. That's why you're getting your tweet on the, no, I'm just kidding. What is the most realistic path to the Phillies competing for a championship in the next 5 years if they miss out on Macharper, Paul?
Oh, boy. Yeah, I know. Nobody wants to think about this. I have tried to deflect people from talking to the TGP account with, you know, thinking like this and getting in this mindset while these guys are, you know, still free agents. But we do have to think about it. And it's it's not a great situation. It's obviously not what anybody wants. Because if you're positioning yourself to rely too heavily on hope, and this is going to sound really bleak, but hang with me for a second here. If you're trying to plan too heavily around hope, if you're hoping for somebody to be a free agent, if you're hoping for someone to improve, if you're hoping for someone to stay healthy, you're putting a little bit too much risk into the equation,
yeah.
I think. You know, you look at some of these teams that, you know, look at the Red Sox, for example. You knew Mookie Betts was going to be good. That's an expectation. That's not a hope.
Yeah.
You knew that Chris Sale was going to be good. That's an expectation. That's not a hope. And on and on and on down the depth chart, you have guys who weren't really coming off of down years. They were already set up for good years. With the Phillies, and that's generalizing, but with the Phillies, you have guys who you can believe in to certain extents, but you're hoping to see improvement for a lot of these guys. You don't have the expectation of great things for really anybody outside of Aaron Nola, and then on tier 1B you have Hoskins,
yeah.
Right? Everybody else you're hoping for good things. And that's risky, right? If you're really serious about competing this year, if you miss out on these guys, you start really digging into who's left on the trade market. You don't force your way into a trade, but you look to fill a hole. Ideally in the outfield, right? If you miss out on Machado, then you ride with Segura and Franco on that side of the infield, because Franco, to me, is a better asset to have around for the next 3 or so years of his control than dealing him for a relief pitcher and then signing Mike Moustakas, who to me is kind of a lateral move on the whole.
Mm-hmm.
And you really, after that, you're looking into value adds. You know, you're thinking about guys like Matt Joyce in the outfield. You're thinking about guys like Logan Morrison as a left-handed bench bat and occasional spell guy, yeah, at first base. Like you're working your way into incremental adds that really aren't going to make much of a difference over the 2018 Phillies, at least you figure, in a way that puts them into playoff contention.
Yeah, it feels like those feel like 2016 and 2017, yeah, type moves. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And at that point, you're not bringing in a whole lot of excitement for this season, and you need a little bit of overachievement and some returns to form for your better players. Really, what you're doing is you're setting yourself up for 500 or 85 win season expectations. And that's what that is.
I agree with you, man. And the most realistic path for them competing for a championship over the next 5 years is for some of these young draft picks to actually perform well at the major league level. And for some of the guys that came up and got their first or second full seasons in the majors last year to take a step forward this year. And we're going to get into some specifics here in just a couple minutes with a couple other of these questions. But you can look at the trade market. Right now, the problem with the trade market is the Phillies have one marquee prospect to trade, and that's Sixto Sanchez, and they don't want to trade him, and I can understand that. I'm probably more open to trading Sixto than most, but only for a premier piece. And I don't know if Corey Kluber is that. If I knew that I was going to get Cy Young caliber Corey Kluber for the next 3 years, I would move Sixto Sanchez. But we're getting to an age with Kluber, and the Indians being willing to move him in the first place while under team control for the next 3 years, when they've already moved a lot of salary off the books, they're still entertaining offers, makes me wonder why. You know, why are you looking to trade a perennial Cy Young contender? I mean, what are they? You're going to have, they either are worried about the drop-off coming, or they just think they can extract so much from a team that they can't say no. Either way, I don't know that I'm the Phillies and that I want to be a part of that. So You know, if you're looking at building this team over the next 5 years to make it a championship contender, I guess you have to hope that your internal guys, that a couple of them hit and become star players, and that a couple of the pitchers in your starting rotation take that step forward, and that you're able to sign a Nolan Arenado if he becomes a free agent next year. But then again, you know, the great white whale, Mike Trout. Maybe he does become a free agent, and maybe he really does want to come. But that's assuming you miss out on Macharper. That's not a plan. Yeah. That's hope right. as a tactic, like you were talking about. And that's no way to land a plane, you know? Right. It's a good line from that, I forget the name of the movie now, but it's a movie about the BP oil spill. I use it all the time. Mark Wahlberg is talking to one of the BP guys, and he says, you know, you guys are running this place like you're a fighter jet trying to land on as the fuel's running out. You know what I mean? Like, that's hope as a tactic. You know, that's flawed thinking. You know, you don't want to run your baseball team that way, and you don't want to really do anything in life that way.
Right.
So, anyway, let's move on. Shiner at Here for the B33R asks, have the Phillies jumped the gun a little bit from rebuild to possible contention, considering that they don't exactly have a strong core of young players aside from Nola and Hoskins? And, Paul, I guess I would push back to say that they don't have a strong core of young players. I think they have a core of young players where we still don't really know exactly what they have, because really, last year was their first full season in the majors. It was the first year for Kingery. It was the first full year for Hoskins. It was the first full year for Jorge Alfaro. The first full year in the majors for Nick Williams. That's a lot of guys. That's four guys, really. And with the starting rotation, you saw a couple of guys. You saw Velasquez and Pivetta make it through and stay on a big league rotation from the start of the season to the end of the season. And that's, I think, to me, that's a big part of the learning curve right there. You know, knowing how to get yourself ready for the last month and a half of the season, which is coincidentally when Velasquez and Pivetta and Eflin, too, kind of fell off because they'd never pitched in the majors to that point in the season before. And so, you know, I think, did they jump the gun on the rebuild? I think that they're going at the pace we all expected here. And I don't think that, I mean, look at the White Sox. They're further behind than the Phillies.
Yeah.
And they're trying to be just as aggressive as the Phils on Macharper, too.
Yeah, no, it's hard to distinguish between what looks like an overeager tactic or approach and what can be construed as something of a leap, right? The Phillies that we saw for the first 4 months of last year were probably overachievers, sure. But they also weren't as bad as they played for the last 2 months, that weird Frankenstein's monster of a team that was out on the field for the last 2 months. That especially in September, that, as far as I'm concerned, has no bearing whatsoever on the team we're about to watch in 2019. That thing was just a hydra. That was a weird old thing that I just as soon forget ever existed. But you look at what happened in the first few months, and you touched on a couple of these points. You're right. There's an endurance and fitness factor with guys pitching a full 6+ months and still having their A game into September. That didn't really happen in some cases, probably because it was their first, you know, crack at going that long into a major league season. But you also look at year-over-year improvement, right? It's not necessarily that guys have arrived at a fully baked stage where we can go in and calling this back, expecting them to have, you know, above average regular or all-star caliber years. We're not quite there with some of these guys. It's true. We can touch on Pivetta a little bit later because I know there's, spoiler alert, a question coming up on him.
You're just chomping at the bit, getting ready for that one. Yeah,
so I'll save the meat on that for later. But you look at guys from 2017 to 18, whether they were in the minors at the time or in the majors. Pivetta is one example. Alfaro is one example. Sir Anthony Dominguez is one example. There are mixed results. But there's improvement in a lot of places, even if some of the more cosmetic stats, you know, things like ERA, don't really look so pretty. The underlying thing with all of this, as far as I'm concerned, is that this team has made improvements over what made them so flawed last year. And even if you could say they were overachieving for half of a season and then a maudlin wreck for the last half, like, somewhere in the middle is a reality with this team. I think they do have a core, And I think we're going to start seeing a little bit more of the statistical performance that you can attribute the term core to, right? Pivetta might never be an ace, but a number three starter is a pretty valuable guy. Jorge Alfaro might never strike out less than 25% of the time, but he has the best catcher's arm I've ever seen and is a freak athlete. We might never see Odubel get back to all-star caliber, but if you have a guy who can, you know, hit somewhere around 270 and get on base 330 and play, for the most part, above average center field defense, mm-hmm. you know, absent an elite option, then that's something you can call part of your core. Can you upgrade it? Yeah, sure. But those are things that you need to have as part of your team that you can't really take for granted. I think I'm a believer in a bunch of these guys, but they do need to actually start proving it on the field statistically to actually validate some of this belief and get that core label more fully formed.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. It's the performance aspect. It's time to ramp up, get scoring runs and being productive in the stat sheet and on the back of the baseball cards for sure here in 2019. And let's get into a couple of questions just about some of the core players here. I got a couple of questions about the Kingery Cesar Hernandez mix at second base. Michael Falsey at Falsey 93 asks, what are the odds the Phils start Kingery over Hernandez is outright at some point this season, regardless of whether they're able to move Cesar? And Brian Manuel at BRO Sidon 12 said, going away from all the Macharper discussion, what do you think the Phillies' plan is regarding Cesar Kingery next season? You know, to me, Paul, I think you and I both agree that Cesar Hernandez has been a good player for this team in recent seasons, mm-hmm. but I think you and I would both agree that we would love to see Scott Kingery get that job and see what he can do, because I'm a believer. I the more I have thought about it, the more I have been thinking about what he went through last year. So, I mean, just consider the Kingery journey last year with me. There's that in spring training, he has a second great spring training, because he was really good in 2017 spring training as well, but there was no way he was getting promoted to the big league level. But he has this unbelievable 2018 spring training, and the team goes out and decides to give him a 5-year major league contract before he's ever seen a single major league pitch in regular, you know. And so now he's a part of the core. He's been anointed. You know, he's got a deal before Rhys Hoskins has a deal, before Aaron Nola has a deal. Scott Kingery has a major league deal. It's probably not a contract either Hoskins or Nola would sign, but regardless, it's, you know, now you've got Kingery, and he's going to play all over the place here, and he has a good start to the season last year. People forget he was hot to start the season last year, but then he's moving all around, and pitchers figure him out, and they figure out exactly where his weaknesses are, and he has a lot of trouble trying to figure it out. Then J.P. Crawford goes down, and so they decide to throw him at shortstop and make him the everyday shortstop, and it's a defensive disaster for the first part of the season. And you know he's just trying to keep his head above water on defense, and I don't know how much he's able to concentrate on fixing the holes in his swing or the flaws in his approach at the plate, but once that ball starts rolling, that snowball gets some momentum going down a hill, and I think that by the end of the year, when he finally started to play a little bit better defensively at shortstop, and by the end of the year, you could see a guy who could fill in for a couple of weeks at shortstop if you needed him to. But you wouldn't want him to be your everyday shortstop. But moving all over the place, getting into a slump, and then starting to get, you know, hear it from the fans, and it start to balloon on itself, and the snowball gets rolling, you can see why the kid may have had a down year in 2018. They did not set him up for success last year. And so I would love to see him back at his normal position, doing what he did in the minors to be successful, and see if playing a position where he doesn't have to think so gosh darn much, that he might be able to focus on his hitting and do better. I just don't know that he's going to get that opportunity here, at least at the start of 2019, Paul.
It is a very, very difficult situation the Phillies find themselves in with these two right now, because I agree that I would love to remove the variable of Scott Kingery playing every position known to man and just let him focus on figuring out the hitting, which is probably the hardest part, you know, figuring out the leap from AAA to major league hitting, not to mention, you know, playing everything from right field to left field to shortstop to second base to a little bit of third base. Taking that out of the equation, I think would be great. That would help us see exactly where he is, how he's progressing, what changes he's making, and how he's adapting. That being said, the problem that we keep running into with this and the solution that we can't seem to find is that no one will want to give up what Cesar Hernandez is really worth in a trade.
Yeah.
We know at the end of last year, he played on a broken foot for somewhere around 6 weeks, and that really kind of marred his final line. But we forget that this guy was having a really good year for the first half of the year and has been rock solid for 3 years now. He's underrated. He continues to be underrated. And I don't let the ending of last season deter me from saying that. The problem now is Cesar can't play anywhere else. They tried him in center field way early on in his career, and that just did not work.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, boy. He like Kingery, does not have the arm for third base. He can't play him there. He's less athletic than Kingery and can't play shortstop. So you can't move him. So now you have two true second basemen. Luckily, Kingery is athletic enough that you can move him around, like you were saying. But you have two true second basemen whose best position they're not really best served being moved off from, and nobody will give up what one guy is worth in trade. So you're kind of caught between a rock and a hard place of you have a logjam, but you also don't want to give up a guy who's been a really good major league regular for years for a song, right? That's bad business, especially because Kingery, yes, with caveats, had a really bad year at the plate. You don't want to really set yourself up for that big of an offensive drop again on hope. It's just there's not enough assurance there. I don't know what the solution is. Somebody has to emerge with a need for a second baseman, probably sometime this summer, unless some freak accident happens during offseason workouts, that they say, okay, we weren't a team that signed Brian Dozier or Jonathan Scope or even Ian Kinsler in some cases. And we weren't a team that signed one of these second basemen that were readily available. Now we need Cesar Hernandez. That's it. It's a dependency and it sucks.
Yeah.
But I don't see another way apart from seeing improvement from Kingery and saying, okay, we're all right getting the value offset in sending Cesar out for nothing just to move Kingery into an everyday role, when right now that looks kind of silly. Like it's a really tough spot, and I don't have a ready-made answer. I really don't.
No, the Phillies don't have a ready-made answer either, and I think it's why we're going to see Cesar Hernandez start the season at second base, and you're going to see Scott Kingery move all over the diamond again. I just think that's the way it's going to work out here to start off 2019, because there was just way too strong a free agent class for second baseman this year. I mean, Jed Lowry's still out there. Did DJ LeMahieu sign with anybody yet? I don't remember if that's happened yet, but he's very talented second baseman as well, and you know, and then other guys went in trades, you know, other better second basemen became available, or at least second basemen that their teams wouldn't have required as much to give them up became available as well this offseason. So just, it was a very tough offseason to move Cesar Hernandez. And so I think at least at the start of the year, Cesar's pretty much going to be your everyday second baseman, especially against right-handed pitchers. You might see Scott Kingery get a few starts here and there against lefties, but overall, it's probably going to be Cesar because the Phillies do need that guy at the top of the order. If he's healthy, Cesar Hernandez is a quality leadoff hitter at the top of the lineup.
To close the loop and confirm, I just went and looked this up because I was second-guessing myself. Yes, DJ LeMahieu is still a free agent. He's still out there, too.
There you go. So there are better options so that we don't have to give anything up rather than trade for Cesar. And maybe somebody at spring training suffers an injury or something like that, like you said, and you know, we're having a different conversation. All right, Dan May at Dan Mal tweets, Phillies missed on lefty starters Corbin and Happ, but seem to be loading up on lefty relievers with the trades for Jose Alvarez and James Pezos, plus maybe signing Zach Britton. Could this be their way to help compensate for an all right-handed rotation? And then I think the more interesting question that he asks here, Dan, is could they use the opener too?
Oh, boy.
Yeah. My feeling on the opener is well established. I hate it. I think it's bad for baseball. It might be a smart tactical move in some ways, but I don't want any part of the opener in Philadelphia. I love starting pitching matchups, Paul. Maybe it's not even old school, but that's the part of me that always looks forward to looking at the pitching matchups for a series, especially a postseason series, and salivating over a couple of great starting pitching matchups. I love that aspect of baseball. I don't want to see Sergio Romo listed as the starting pitcher 3 days a week. You know, it's just, that's not for me. And I think that Gabe Kapler mentioned last year that he, when he was asked about the opener, that he doesn't think that would fly in Philadelphia either. And I have to agree. I don't think it would. But do you see, I mean, this is an analytical driven team, Paul. Yeah. Can you see a situation where maybe they head down that road at some point, if not this year, then in the next couple years?
I do. And just to expand on that one comment that you mentioned from Kapler, because he did say that, and he's 100% correct that if something like this is tried out and doesn't fly, then people are just going to like be up in arms, and rightfully so, because I'm with you. It's ugly. It's aesthetically ugly baseball. But during the baseball prospectus event, in July or August, I believe it was late July of this past year, that I was fortunate enough to attend, Kapler did a little Q&A with a couple of us. And he mentioned that personally, he loves the opener. He loves the idea of the opener, and that, you know, strategically and methodologically, it makes sense in some cases. It sounds like this is coming from a guy who, if given the opportunity, would want to try this out. The thing that I run into here, the way the Phillies are currently built, is they are not built necessarily like the Brewers or the Rays, where they have just an absolute death valley of starting pitching depth.
Yeah.
You know, those two teams, the Brewers had a slew of injuries. The Rays weren't really cranking them out outside of Blake Snell. And you have just a need to work advantageously in the first inning and then hand it off to someone who could eat a few more innings. Phillies don't have that problem. The Phillies are loaded right now, if you can use that word, with guys who are potentially number three, number four starting pitcher types in the upper minors, right? You have the five guys who are establishing the rotation: Nola, Arrieta, Pivetta, Velasquez, Eflin. Then you run into guys like Eniel De Los Santos and Cole Irvin and Jojo Romero, and maybe even later in the year you think about Adonis Medina if everything goes right. You have a bunch of guys, and I'm leaving names off. You have a bunch of guys who can start games. That being said, to answer the question and bring this back in a little bit, I don't necessarily see the left leaning in the bullpen as compensation for the rotation.
Yeah.
The Phillies' goal is to completely smooth over platoon advantages. They want guys who, whether they are right-handed or left-handed as pitchers, right-handed or left-handed or switch as batters, they don't want platoon deficiencies. This emerged with the Santana signing, even though the Santana signing didn't work out for reasons that were not necessarily Carlos Santana's fault. Santana was a guy who came in with very little platoon splits, right? There wasn't much of a discernible advantage, whether he was left or right. They want guys, if they're left-handed, they can get lefties and righties out, or at least handle them better. They want guys who are, and this actually fits in with the ideology of the whole thing, they want flexible guys. Mm-hmm. They don't want to be locked into only having a lefty specialist necessarily. They want this availability and guys you know and can have confidence in bringing them out for a stretch of three batters in a right, left, right lineup stretch, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't see that necessarily as being compensation, because right now they just want guys who can get both handednesses out. Handednesses, say that seven times fast. they want guys who can get guys out regularly. And I don't think it necessarily means they're marrying themselves to looking to fill a vacancy depending on which hand the pitcher throws with.
I agree with you. And that's the thing we see with this Phillies team, is they want flexibility. They want guys who could do more than one thing. And by that, as if you're a relief pitcher or a starting pitcher, get out both different guys who can hit from either side of the plate. Because you're right. We know Gabe loves to use the bullpen, but even he doesn't want to have to change a pitcher every other hitter. You know, I mean, he would probably like to leave one guy in. We saw him, I think, at times last year, to the team's detriment, leaving in pitchers too long to face too many hitters of different sides of the plate, guys who just weren't capable of doing that. And so it'll be interesting to see whether or not that involves adding a guy like Zach Britton, who, frankly, had better numbers last year against righties and lefties as opposed to Andrew Miller, who was really just locked in against left-handers. And maybe the Phillies will be willing to give a sweeter contract to a guy like Britton, who has shown the ability to get lefties and righties out in recent seasons, or at least as far back as recently as last year. Both guys have their flaws as well. The guys Jose Alvarez and James Pezos, I'm not even 100% convinced both of those guys are on the big league roster breaking spring training. You know, I mean, they might be, they could be, but you know, one of those two guys or both of those guys may not even be on the roster. So kind of have to wait and see how that shakes out. But I agree with you. Too much starting pitching depth in this organization to consider using the opener at this point. I want to double back on this at Drew Tweets Now tweet in just a second, but first, because it's a good tweet, maybe we can close on that one. I think that'd be a good one to close on, so I'm going to come back to that one in just a second. But let's see if we can't knock these last couple out here in a little bit more rapid succession. Amanda C. at MandaB310 asks, will McCutchen, as a role model, give Odubel Herrera what he needs to live up to his potential? Obviously, McCutchen is a great locker room guy. Paul, we all know that. He's renowned for being a good clubhouse leader, for the work he does in the community. I think he's going to be a great voice in that locker room, because one of the things that seemed to happen last year is when the team was really going through their struggles, there didn't seem to be any cohesiveness coming out of that locker room. You know, I've kind of heard it reported that at various times the locker room was segregated into different cliques and whatnot, with like Latin guys and non-Latin guys, and you know, there wasn't really a whole lot of locker room cohesion necessarily. But here's the other thing I will say is, one guy doesn't fix all that,
right?
You know, maybe if it takes the pressure off of Rhys Hoskins to have to be really vocal, I'm good with that. But I don't think you can, at least as far as I'm concerned, you can't look at Andrew McCutchen as the Odubel healer. You know, that's not his job, first of all. I don't want that to be his job. I want Andrew McCutchen to focus on Andrew McCutchen and to be a clubhouse leader and to speak up when things need to be speak up. And if he can mentor Odubel Herrera and be a good example, that's fine. But you know what? Here's the deal. If we still need a babysitter for Odubel Herrera, if we need somebody to follow him around and make sure he's getting to meetings on time, I'm done with him. I'm ready to be. I don't need that kind of a player in my life. You know what I mean? I don't. He's not so talented that he can afford to be that player. If you're Manny Ramirez, you can show up to meetings whenever you want. You know what I mean? But if you're Odubel Herrera, where you're wildly inconsistent and you make mental mistakes on the base paths, you can't be the guy who just is loafing around and not showing up to meetings on time. And that was one of the things Odubel was talking about at the end of the season last year, was that, you know, he didn't have Freddy Galvis and he didn't have Andres Blanco always on him, telling him to get to meetings and to work out. And I don't know if one thing had something to do with the other. I don't know if that's why he struggled for the last 3 months of the season last year, but I don't know that it's not nothing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It could be something, but I don't know that it's up to Andrew McCutchen to be always checking in on Odubel Herrera, saying, hey man, you got it. You know, did you get to the outfield? We got to get to outfielders meeting. Come on, man, put your Game Boy down. That's not how I want Andrew McCutchen deployed necessarily.
No, you're absolutely right. That's not his job. He's not a babysitter. I would think at the very least he couldn't hurt, because yes, everything reported about him is that he is a wonderful guy to have around, both in the clubhouse and the community. And having a guy like that around, in addition to being a pretty good baseball player, that's no detriment any way you look at it. If he can somehow connect with Odubel, awesome. If there's some message that can get through and Odubel ups his game a little bit, fantastic. I, like you said, it's not his job, it's not his responsibility, but if it happens, wonderful.
Yep, totally agree, 100%. So if Andrew McCutchen, the main thing is getting him to play like a 3-4 win player. This one's for you, my friend. Joshua Morgan at @FatCat_PartyHat. That's
here it
his
is.
Twitter handle.
Here it is.
Yeah, here we go, everybody. Gear up. Why do people like Pivetta so much?
Ugh.
His performance doesn't look anything other than a mediocre fifth starter.
Ugh.
Paul, the floor is yours.
Mediocre fifth starter. The words are cutting to my
Joshua
heart.
Ryan Morgan, you're injuring Paul Boyer. I want you to, you can hear the anguish in his voice.
Just emotional damage. Here's the thing. I am not going to sit here and preach on a soapbox and tell you Nick Pivetta is about to emerge as an ace in 2019. I am not going to tell you that he is going to turn into the next Justin Verlander. I'm not even going to tell you that he'll necessarily rival Aaron Nola for best starter on the staff. I'm not going to promise any of those things. Here's what I know, and here's what I've seen in watching this guy over the last season. There are some ugly numbers attached to Nick Pivetta. His 2017 numbers gross. We won't even talk about them. His 2018 numbers, certainly on the surface, you really don't see a lot to like if you took a quick look at his baseball card. You see a guy who went 7-14 with an ERA over 4.75, who could barely average 5 innings a start. All right, you see that and you're like, well, that's kind of stinky. Why do we believe in this guy? Here's why you need to believe in Nick Pivetta. All right. This is a guy who was so badly hindered by the 2018 Phillies defense that he couldn't quite overcome it like Aaron Nola did, right?
Yep.
He has raw stuff that rivals Aaron Nola's. And I will say that he has raw stuff that will hang up there. He's got the mid-90s heat that you need to be an effective pitcher, but he's also got one of the deepest curveballs in almost the entire league. It's a 12-6. It doesn't slurve quite as much as Nola's best, but when it's got its proper depth to it, and I took a look at this back in early September when I asked the question of whether Nick Pivetta was actually having a breakout season underneath all of these numbers, and the answer I came to is that probably yeah. A lot of it has to do with that breaking ball. And calling back to what I was talking about with year-over-year improvement, I briefly touched on Pivetta when we were talking about the core of this team, right? If you look at what happened from 2017 into 2018, the homers went down. The strikeouts went up. The walks went down. The extra base hits went down. Ground balls went up. Swinging strikes went up. First pitch strikes went up. Pitches per plate appearance went down. Walks just got completely shaved off. Overall contact went down by about 5 percentage points. This is a guy who in nearly every rate stat that we have, and this really even stays pretty basic. We're not talking about anything super complex here. The percentage of guys he strikes out and walks, the percentage of pitches that get swung on and missed or get any sort of contact whatsoever, like that's what we're talking about here. Every single one of those improved year over year, and that held up over a full season and additional 100 plate appearances. This is a guy who, if he stays healthy, and that can be said of anybody, if he stays healthy, is going to have a year that's going to surprise a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the, there's a very thematic thing tying a lot of my comments together. That's the faith that we need to have in this guy, in knowing that he has this stuff. He's got 2+ pitches right now and is refining the slider to hopefully become a third, but he's got the fastball and the curveball. So, you know, that's the foundation right there. If the rest of his secondaries get a little bit better and he keeps working on whatever got him these ups and whiff rate and dropped walks and all these things, then we have a guy who could be really good. Look at it this way. There's a stat that's really simple. It takes the difference between the strikeout percentage and walk percentage of a pitcher. And it's just that, not per nine, but of all the batters they face, whether it was an out or not. So there were, what's the raw number here? There were 57 pitchers who threw 162 innings to qualify for the ERA title. 57 pitchers last year. The leaders in K minus walk percent. You might recognize some of these names, okay? I'm just going to read you the top 10. Tell me when I reach a name that you might not recognize. Justin Verlander, Max Scherzer, Jacob deGrom, Garrett Cole, Patrick Corbin, Carlos Carrasco, Trevor Bauer, Blake Snell, Corey Kluber, Luis Severino. That's the top 10 in the league. So you'd say, okay, this statistic tracks pretty well with who I know to be pretty good pitchers, right?
Yeah.
In 12th place, we have Aaron Nola. Oh, yeah, he's pretty good too.
I've heard of him.
Yeah. 11th, by the way, was German Marquez, who in Colorado.
Great pitcher for the Rockies. Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah, he'll surprise people this year too. 13th, Charlie Morton. Oh, yeah, we kind of wanted to sign him to a free agent deal, didn't we? Huh. 14th, Nick Pivetta. Hmm.
Wow.
So that's just one statistic. It's one, right? I grant you, baseball players are a more complete picture than one statistic. But among all of those names, among established stars and potential breakout guys like Marquez, Nick Pivetta is right there. He was above Jay Happ. He was above Zach Greinke. He was above David Price. He was above Cole Hamels. He's a guy who, and this didn't really translate to runs allowed. I get it. I will maintain that the defense let him down more than anything. This is a guy who's good. And I'll just leave it at that. He's good. We need to believe in him. And I think he's going to surprise a lot of people this year. Thank you so much for that question, Josh.
No, that was a great question. And Paul, you unpacked that beautifully, because that I totally agree 100%. If I'm going to move a guy to the bullpen, it's going to be Velasquez and not Pivetta. Pivetta, I think, absolutely has staying power in the rotation. And again, he's a guy who towards the end of the year had surpassed previous career innings highs. Yeah. He had never pitched that many innings at the big league level before. And like Pivetta and like Eflin, I think got tired at the end of the year as well. Fatigue set in. And, you know, when your team is losing, it also has an effect on how you perform. But, you know, I agree 100%. I'm a Pivetta stan myself. And so I am big on Big Nick's ascent to maybe a level of a pitching group that, well, like in the names you just mentioned a second ago, that's some mighty fine company. All right, last tweet of the show here, Paul. Drew at Drew Tweets now asks, if you could take one Phillies player from the 90s and add him in his Phillies prime, let's say, to the current roster, who would you pick? I'll let you go first. Do you have one in mind? If not, I'll go first, but otherwise you can go first.
Yeah, I do, actually.
Go ahead.
And I'd go with Mike Lieberthal, because he barely makes it.
Good pick.
He barely makes it. I love Jorge Alfaro to death. I really do. But if we're talking about prime players, 1999 Mike Lieberthal, baby. Like, that's about as good as it gets in the history of this position for this franchise. You know, Dutch had himself some really good years, and Chooch had himself some really good years. But 1999, Leiby, baby, we had a 30-double, 30-homer catcher who hit 300. Like, what more do you want? Yeah. On top of that, that was his best defensive year too, right? You look at the caught ceiling numbers didn't necessarily pan out all that much, but they were a leap over his early years. He was, by all means, at the very worst, a competent defender. He won the Gold Glove probably because he slugged his way to it. But he won a Gold Glove, so that checks that box. He started 138 games, so he was reliable. If you can get that kind of production and that kind of defense out of your catching position on this team, sign me up.
I like that pick of Mike Lieberthal. I'm going to go with somebody from that 1993 team and all that. But, you know, that 93 team had a lot of one-hit wonders on it. Or, you know, Lenny Dykstra was good for a couple of years here. But, you know, and you said Darren Dalton had three or four really good years. But the guy that I'm going with is the guy that a lot of Phillies fans just flat out don't like. And that's Scotty Rowland. You look at Scott Rowland from his time, 1997, his first full year with the team. Check out these FWARs, okay? Leading up to 2001. So he had 5 full seasons with the Phillies, including a Rookie of the Year thrown in there. Had a wins above replacement of 4.2 in his Rookie of the Year season of 97. Then 7.0 in 1998, 4.8 in 1999, 4.6 in 2000, and 5.6 in 2001. He would then go on. He'd be traded in the 2002 season, where he would put up a 6.5 WAR between the Phillies and the Cardinals, and then have a 6.2 and a 9.0 season the next two seasons with the Cardinals in the early 2000s. But that 97 to 99 run, that 3 or 4 season stretch there, 31 home. His best season was in 98, had a 31 homer, 120 run, 110 RBI season, batted 290, 391, 532 at third base. That was his 7-win season with the team. I mean, can you imagine that type of player at third base right now for the Phillies?
That dude was a hell of a player, man.
He was probably the best Phillies player of the 1990s. I mean, you look at, you think of like, yeah, you could argue Kruk, maybe you could argue Dykstra, you could argue Dalton. You know, I'm not talking about pitchers. I think Schilling was probably the overall best player from the 1990s, but I think it's got to be Scott Rowland. Rowland is getting serious Hall of Fame consideration every year. He may never get in until, like, maybe if the veterans, you know, vote him in, the veteran committee votes him in years down the road. But
yeah,
as far as like also team fit, what this team needs, what this Phillies team needs right now, and what he does with elite defense and the bat that he had. If I could take that Scott Rowland and plug him into this team right now, I think that would be an amazing thing.
That's a superb choice. Yep, absolutely no fault
with
that.
Well, I think, unfortunately, you know, Scott Rolen is not coming, but the Phillies might be getting a guy who is as talented in Machado. Who's to say? Let's just keep an eye on the tweet deck. You know, probably nothing going to happen until after the new year, so we can all probably just relax until after the new year. Machado said it's not going to happen until January, and I keep seeing Harper might not decide until February, which will give us all a coronary, but that's just... That's just, I guess, what we deserve. But listen, man, Paul, it's been so good to have you back on the podcast. It's been a while. I'm thrilled to have you back and have you on regularly on Hittin' Season. Folks, make sure to follow Paul on Twitter at Paul_Boyer. Also follow The Good Fight on Twitter at The Good Fight, and you'll get Paul's words fed at you there at The Good Fight as well. Hey, man, thanks so much for your time tonight and for answering some mailbag questions, buddy. I appreciate it.
John, always a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
And folks, hey, make sure to go to Apple Podcasts and subscribe to all of The Good Fight podcasts and leave a rating and a review while you're there. That will do it for episode number 243. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in, and we'll talk to y'all next time right here on Hittin' Season.
Hello, I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation, and I want to tell you about my new show, It Seemed Smart. It Seemed Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seemed smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain. Or, I don't know, maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission. Or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.